Hello and welcome to another episode of the Send Mum Club, the parenting podcast with a difference. I'm your host, Gemma. Thank you for listening. So we are officially into the summer holidays, and I'm guessing that's relevant to you because I'm assuming that it is, I would say 99% mums that are listening. And certainly if you're not a mum, you might be a dad, but either way, a parent. So how's it going for you so far? Mine has been uneventful, I would say. Leo isn't in nursery yet anyway, so that's kind of irrelevant. My older two are between us and their dad, and they're actually away with him. So I have just got Leo on my own. So far, so good. We are going away on a family holiday soon to Torquay, which I'm very excited about. Hopefully you've got nice plans for the summer as well. Hopefully you're surviving. I know we're only just at the very beginning of a very long, well, 6 weeks here. I don't know how long your kids have got off. But let's just hope that we all stay sane and don't run out of money too early. It's expensive, the summer holidays, isn't it? My plan was to continue to do episodes over the 6 weeks. But like I mentioned, we're going away. And that presented a kind of a stress to me in itself because I would have had to get ahead. And being completely honest with you, I'm already slightly behind. But that was my plan until I had a chat with my friend Naomi and kind of mentioned the fact, oh God, you know, we're going away. I'm going to have to get loads of recordings in the bag and edit them because this is just me on my own. Unfortunately, I don't have anyone else around me to help. I haven't got like a team doing the socials for me or editing. It is just me and my laptop, which is so old that soon it will die, but that's a problem for another day. So anyway, I'm chatting to my friend Naomi. We'd taken the babies out for a walk and she suggested that I have a break over the summer, and she hadn't even finished the sentence before I was like, yes, that's what I'll do. And it made me think, isn't it funny that sometimes you almost feel like you need permission from somebody else to do the thing that you know is going to be right for you? And we really shouldn't feel like that. But as soon as she said it, it felt like the right thing. And I also thought, you know, I can't expect people to give up their time to record with me when their kids are off and they might not have childcare and everyone's out of a routine. So here's what I've decided to do. Take the summer off. We will return in September. And over that time, I have got some amazing guests lined up to record with so I can get ahead of myself again, which is exactly where I like to be. But I thought I'm not going to leave you with nothing. And one of my favourite parts of this podcast, other than having these conversations with the amazing women that I've spoken to so far and learning a lot from each person, I have to say, every episode I've learned something and taken something on board from the conversations that we've had. But one of my favourite bits, I have to say, is the advice at the end. Because as you all know, I finish every episode with the same two questions. And one of them is, what's the best piece of advice you've ever been given? So I thought, why not put all of that advice together in one episode for you? Maybe you haven't listened to all of them, or maybe you've forgotten some of it, because this, unbelievably, is episode 21. I can't believe I've already got this far with the podcast. It's crazy. And I know for definite that there's been bits of advice that have been spoken about on this podcast that at the time I've gone, oh my God, yes, that's brilliant. And then I probably haven't remembered. And there's definitely been ones where I've gone, I'm going to do that. I'm going to take that on board. And then I haven't. So I've sat down and I have got together all of those brilliant pieces of advice for you and put them all together so we can all refresh our memories together. And I am going to start by going right back to the beginning with my fabulous first guest, Polly.
That question for me, whether you asked it on the spot or you've given me pre-warning, is at rapid recall because it stands out so vividly in my mind. Going back to the hospital, you know, in the NICU kind of phase, we just, I think, just got out and it had been like just utter negative doom, gloom, you know. And one of the nurses had asked if we would mind participating. They needed some volunteers for this, you know, this OT, this guru that was coming down to teach all these other OTs specific movement. And the nurses in the NICU were fabulous. They were amazing. They became my best friends. And I was like, yeah, of course, like, we'd love to do that. And we went along to this space and there was probably about 50 other sort of, you know, OTs sitting in this space, and you could hear a pin drop It was just peaceful and silent and this very calming space. And this woman at the front, you know, worked with my children, and she was so soft and, oh, God, she makes me feel so emotional thinking about it, because of the way she, you know, she just saw my kids as kids, and the way she was handling them and treating them in, you know, a time where we'd seen them prodded and poked and all of that business. And I just remember at the end of this session, and she said to us, just ignore everything the doctors, you know, the medical profession tell you. They're going to tell you the worst case scenario of what to expect in a future that, you know, you've never visited or doesn't belong to you, and just be in the here and now and have the highest expectations of your children. Just always have the highest expectations, you know, because the minute you say, oh, well, that's it, they're never going to do X, Y, and Z, then you stop trying, you stop showing up for them. And it's not to say to live in a fantasy land that, you know, suddenly they're going to, you know, I don't know, swim across the channel, but it's just seeing them as children and never forgetting that, and giving them all the opportunities that you would any other child.
I love that advice. Yeah. That's fab.
I would say ask for help. So I used to really struggle with this one, because I used to think I had to do everything myself with Nina. But I just think having that support network and that little bubble of people, my mum and dad are my saviours in this life, because they've educated themselves on Nina and they totally get her now. And it's okay to ask for help. I know you might want to do everything yourself, but you've got to take care of yourself too. So, yeah, I think that would be my biggest and best advice.
Don't ever Google anything, especially if it comes down to a medical thing, because it'll tell you the worst thing in the world. So that was the best. That was the best advice I was ever given. So I never Google anything. I've got a friend who will, and she'll just tell me the good bits.
So do you ask her to Google for you?
So I'll say, what does this mean? But if it's something bad, don't tell me.
Do you know what? I love that.
We live in a world now where we go to Google for answers. But that was my first piece of advice from Leighton CF team, was don't ever Google it, because you won't like what you see. And it's not entirely correct neither, the statistics of it.
I got given exactly the same piece of advice by our consultant who gave us Leo's diagnosis. And she said, whatever you do, don't Google. She was like, the information online about Down syndrome is outdated. There's a lot of stereotypes. Just don't Google. But it's interesting that you say that your friend does, because I've always kept that in my mind of don't Google, because I'm the type of person that if I see something or read something, it will stay in my head forever. So I'm like,
and
okay.
And then you're just flooded with anxiety.
Exactly. Exactly.
You've got a million questions then.
But then there have been things that I've wanted to know. I mean, Leo's only two. So, you know, maybe something about, I don't know, about speech as he gets older, as an example. That's one thing I'm like, well, will his speech definitely not be very clear because of low tone? Or, you know, is there a possibility that his speech will be completely clear? So that's one thing that plays on my mind.
Don't worry about it. Katie will sort it for you.
I keep thinking, don't Google. But I like the idea of asking somebody else to Google, because there's definitely things I don't know because I don't Google.
Yeah. So I'll ask her. She'll research it and she'll say, oh, it's fine. It just means this. And I'm like, I'm all right with that.
I really like that. That's some great advice.
Oh, the best piece. I've been given lots of advice. I guess the best piece of advice I've been given is to advocate loudly for your child. And I think that's stuck with me, because if you're the only person your child has to advocate for them. So to advocate loudly, to get your child what your child deserves.
And Gemma, what about you?
And the best bit of advice I got given is that nothing is permanent. So at the start of my journey, I always used to worry, like you were saying before, like you don't even know what an EHCP is, you don't know what school they need. It's very difficult sometimes for us to realise that we're the expert on our own children when we're looking at all these authority figures around us. And when we're trying to pick things like school choices, everything feels like such a mammoth decision to be making. It's like, this is my child's life. This is my child's future. What if I get it wrong? But nothing is permanent.
I was actually told not to look too far into the future and to live in the present day moment. And I think we've touched on that today. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that is a very important bit of advice to sort of focus on. Because looking into the future, you don't know what the future holds for anyone. I don't know what my future holds, what my elder boy's future holds. Like, you just don't know, do you? And like you say, the world is moving in positive ways. So hopefully, by the time our children are sort of adults, the world is going to be a nicer place. We can only hope, can't we?
Yeah, exactly.
So just living in the present day moment and, yeah, not looking too far in the future, I'd say it's a really good bit of information that I've had, and I've kind of lived by that ever since.
The best piece of advice I think would be that you know your child better than anyone. You're an expert in your child, and parental concern is a very real thing. And if you think that something isn't quite right, you need to trust that and trust your gut and go with it, and don't let go until you've been heard, because you see that child every day. You know when something's not quite right. You're the expert. You might not be a medical expert, but you're the expert in your child.
Just make sure you're the voice of your child. You know your child best, you know, and don't stop until you've got the right, you know, care for your children.
The best piece of advice is probably, and this would kind of mainly apply to children who have autism or autistic people, was changing his diet. We were advised to change his diet. We saw a functional health practitioner just for a couple of sessions on Zoom a few years ago. And she said, you know, a lot of children with autism are not able to process certain foods because they're sensitive to it or their body can't process them. So she said, you know, try this diet. It was a massive change because it was gluten-free, grain-free, dairy-free, which then at the time I was like, well, what's left? Like, oh my God. And she said, you know, that the first few days that you take him off gluten, he will behave like an addict withdrawing from something. And I was like, surely not. That's ridiculous. And she was absolutely right. And it was very difficult. And what happened was he went from, you know, kind of self-harming behaviors, you know, scratching, like not connecting at all, not engaging, becoming more and more in his own world, you know, more and more distressed. You know, his sleep was horrendous. And when we changed the diet, within a week or so of being on that diet, he has been like a different child. He is calmer, he sleeps better, he's more engaged, he's more connected, he's happier. And if he ever has something with a tiny amount of any of those foods in by accident, he can be up all night biting, scratching, you know, he's wired and he can't. And it just shows me how sensitive some of these kids are to, you know, diet and, you know, what's kind of in their environment, you know. And that can be a huge task. And it's not possible for everyone, particularly with autistic kids, because a lot of autistic kids are very choosy about what they can eat and what they will eat. So, you know, I know it's not doable for everyone. Fortunately, it was and is doable for us. He's been on that about 6 years now, and it's life-changing, absolutely life-changing. So that was the best bit of information she ever gave us.
Well, there's a lot of research being done now, isn't there, into how food can affect or does affect brain function. And it's stuff that's come out in the last few days about ultra-processed foods, and eliminating or hugely cutting down on ultra processed foods can help reduce, obviously not get rid of, because that's not how, you know, neurodiversity works, but can reduce symptoms of ADHD in children, well, and adults.
Absolutely. And autism. Yeah, absolutely.
I think probably the best advice was always ask for help. And I'm not good at asking for help. And that's always been one of my downfalls. I'm always like, no, I could do this. I can do this.
No, I'm the same.
You know, if they wanted to help me, they would have helped, you know. But sometimes people can't see that you need help because you're so good at masking it. So ask for help before it's too late. Ask for help. People love to help.
I'm going to take that advice for myself. So thank you for that.
I was thinking of this, and it's something that always comes into my head. And it was, I know I talked about the, you know, the diagnosis and that quite harsh information we received, that medical information. But the geneticist, when she gave us the information, said, you know, Harry is the master of his own destiny. And that is something that always pops into my head every few days. And it just really brings it back when things get too much or I look too far or I try and compare Harry to other children of Prader-Willi or even typical children, that, you know, Harry is Harry and he has Prader-Willi, but he isn't Prader-Willi syndrome. And, you know, he will live his life as best as he can and as best as we're, you know, able to help him. But yeah, that was definitely something that comes into my mind every few days.
Oh, that's such a great thing to say to somebody when you're delivering information like that. I love that you got told that.
Probably like breathe and take a minute for yourself, because I'm the worst for it. Like, I'm my biggest critic and I'm so determined on doing things and I focus solely on Harriet and helping others, I kind of forget to actually take any care of myself. And I have family all the time, like, just breathe for a minute, like, just take a moment, like, try and just have 5-10 minutes and we'll just watch Harriet for a minute, just breathe, because you're just constant. And I'm like, I know, but I've got to do this and I've got to do that. And it is just so easy. Like, obviously, we all love to have these magical babysitters that come and know how to take care of our children so we can have 5 minutes. But I don't have a magical babysitter. And even though I'm 24/7 with Harriet, I should still take time to take care of myself, because some days I just want to get up. And when I throw a pair of joggers on and do nothing, I used to bother with going to the gym. I can't, like, it's as hard to do as a carer, unless they're in full-time school or something like that. So it's hard to take care of your own health when you're so focused on trying to meet your child's needs. So piece of advice, think of yourself and take a moment for yourself, as well as advocating for your children 24/7.
Good advice.
The best piece of advice I was sort of given is that I don't have to say yes to everything. And it was in regards to like medical appointments. And so in terms of like saying, like, you don't have to be part of the community if you don't want to. I also think I realised you don't have to say yes to in the beginning, especially of a diagnosis, you are layered with hospital appointments and you feel like you have to go to everything. And especially for us, I just instantly said no to everything, because I was like, we've got living to do. I don't know how much longer she's going to be able to do that. So I sort of, and I'm so glad someone said that to me. You don't have to say yes to everything, and you don't have to say yes to every medical decision. You know, that's still your child. You still have ultimate control. I don't like the word control, but you know, like, ultimate, you can read things. So I think that was the best piece of advice, is trust what you think. If you don't want to say yes to going to the dietitian constantly because you don't feel it's necessary and you'd rather go to the park, then do that. If you don't feel like a medication's right for your child, then don't feel like you have to put them on it. Change the dosage, speak to, you know, like, I just think that, like, take a bit back for yourself and give yourself that confidence to know that you know your child best and you can make those decisions for them with help, but the help doesn't have to overwhelm your life.
That's such an interesting point. I think that's great advice, so thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this one, and it is such a standard answer, but don't Google. You know, we got given that right at the beginning by Dr. Arugbemi, and I think that's a very good piece of advice. It's a very obvious one, very simple one, but I think it's a good one.
It is, but then also I do feel like that's held us back sometimes, because there's things that me and you both want to know. You know, in our last therapy session we were talking about, you know, in terms of like cognitive ability to understand things, we don't really understand how Leo's Down syndrome will affect that. And then that's normally in any other situation. If you didn't know something, your natural instinct would be to Google. But because we've been given this advice so early, like now, there's things that I want to know. Like, he's still, there's two of his teeth haven't come through at the bottom. Well, he's got all of the rest of them. He's got his back teeth. There's just these two at the bottom, which usually would be some of the first teeth that would come. And I want to know if it's possible that they aren't there because of his Down syndrome. But then I can't Google. And it's like, oh, okay. God.
Well, let me rephrase it then, because I definitely do Google and have Googled. So let me rephrase it, because that's the advice that was given to us. But so how I would...
No,
well, I have. But I suppose what I would say is that all of Google doesn't apply to you and your family and your situation. I think that's what I've taken from Don't Google, is that I am going to. Everyone, and obviously apart from you, front of the class, grade A student, Gemma. Yes, sir, of course. You actually hasn't. I don't think anyone else who's heard that advice has actually stuck to it like you have. But I would just say, you know, just know that all of Google doesn't apply to you.
No, Jodie, who came on, she doesn't Google. She's got a friend. If she wants to know something, and I love this, if you haven't listened to Jodie's episode, by the way, it's great. She asks her friend, and her friend Googles for her and then reports back. But now I know that you're
Jodie does Google.
But through somebody else?
Yeah, through her mate. So she still does. Well,
now I know that you're secretly Googling when I've gone to sleep. You can be my Google mate. Do me a favour, Ben. Google Leo's teeth, will you?
Yeah, but I suppose the serious bit of that is that you've got to, like, if you're going to do it, you've got to do it knowing that this is a bit like when we went to that event when Leo was 2 months old. Mm. You know, just because it happens to some people and some families and they have an experience of something in one way doesn't mean that that'll be your experience. And you will have experiences that no one else has.
I knew you'd do this. So if you're listening and you're like, I'd love to be a guest on this podcast. Well, firstly, I'd love to have you, like, get in touch via the Instagram at the Send Mum Club. But I just, for full transparency, I always give the guests those two questions in advance, because especially that advice one, I feel like if you put somebody on the spot with that, that's the kind of thing. If somebody put me on the spot, I'd go, oh God, oh, I don't know. And then 2 days later, I'd go, oh, why didn't I say that? So I always let people know those two questions so that they can have a little think about what they want to say. So I'd done that with you and you'd gone, oh, I can't think of anything. And I knew when I actually asked you, you'd say something really profound and great, and you did.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks.
Don't underestimate him, Kobe. Or just children with additional needs, just don't underestimate them, because I think they will show you what they've got in the locker, shall we say. Yeah. Which I did. You know, when you get that first diagnosis and you kind of go, oh my God, they're not going to be able to do, and it's all the negatives, they're not going to be able to do this, they're not going to be able to do that. And it's cut all that out and let's focus on what they can do.
I agree, but I think that unfortunately comes from societal stereotypes. And if you haven't ever experienced somebody with that before, maybe you hadn't experienced somebody with a limb difference before. I'd never experienced someone with Down syndrome before. So you are going on those stereotypes that are in your head that are kind of backed up by society, unfortunately, aren't you?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And what you're seeing on social media and the comments that you're reading. Mm. Yeah, for sure.
Trust yourself. Trust your gut and just be present. See the baby, see the child.
Not the diagnosis.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I agree.
My mum, when we were first diagnosed, she bought me a notebook and she said, write everything down. So I've written every test, every phone call, every appointment. I've written it down in 2.5 years. And it's probably been the best thing ever. Because you have so many teams and they do not communicate. So actually, it's been really beneficial for me to be like, well, actually, on the 29th of June, you actually said this. And on this day, this person said that. And I think that's been the most helpful thing, because they honestly do not communicate at all to each other. So you do get these meetings every so often called a team around the child meeting, but again, it's called different things, so everyone gets together, but the chances of any consultants actually getting on that telephone call is very unlikely. So I always just write everything down, send them to who needs to send them to. But yeah, I've kept a journal for me, and so that at least I know that I've written every report, everything down in that way, which has been really beneficial for me and our family.
Yeah, I can see how helpful that would be. And actually, that must have been really helpful when you were doing your DLA application as well, because
absolutely,
I didn't have any of that. And then it's like, oh, name all the teams that he's under. And the last thing they said, and I was like, oh, God. Luckily, we'd kept all our hospital letters. But then it's going through all of that paperwork and sifting in what you know, what you do need and what you don't need. But, you know, I've just got a stack of letters from Alder Hey. But the way that you've done it makes much more sense. And I actually might start doing that from now.
Yeah,
just
you definitely should. It's really helpful. And sometimes even like I'll just write, you were brilliant, or you were amazing, just in case, like if he were to ever look at it in the future or something. I went through that, and but yeah, that was the best thing I've written down. So like I've always kept track of what people said and where we were on this day. And you do get bombarded with appointments, so definitely writing them down is the best thing ever. Yeah, because otherwise,
well done, your mum,
she'll love that place.
Always be an advocate. I mean, because like you said earlier, there were times where I just felt like, oh my God. And I think Emma, my friend, who said to me, if you are in this pathway of trying to get an EHCP, trying to get a specialist school, you have to be the loudest person that you can be, because the reality is your child will fall between the cracks and they will get forgotten about. So as draining as it can be, I mean, we are in such a different place now to what we were 2 years ago, but purely because you have to advocate. You have to be the loudest person screaming from the rooftop, like, this is my child, you need to stop and listen. And the reality is, if you don't, they'll probably fall between the gaps.
I'd say it's probably similar to everybody else's, is that don't look too far ahead. I think it's your natural instinct to go a zillion years ahead and think, what will the future be like? I think it's really easy to say, because it's not that hard to, it's a whole lot harder to actually do, but try and live in the day if you can, and live day by day, and enjoy them. If you're a new parent to a child with Down syndrome or any diagnosis, just enjoy them, look after them like you would any other child, because that's all they need, is love and care, and everything else can sort of worry about it when you get to it. Don't let that worry and consumption of that diagnosis sort of affect the way that you're missing out on the newborn bit. And that's one my one regret really was that I did so much worrying and crying, and I missed a little bit of the beginning with Dottie, and I think that's probably my biggest regret. So my best advice really would be, don't look too far ahead, and just enjoy them.
Yeah, I feel you there.
The best piece of advice I was given was just be guided by him. As a mum, you kind of just want to swaddle them and make it right and protect them, but actually sometimes that veered me away from actually letting him be in control of his own path.
Oh, I hope you enjoyed listening to that as much as I did. I really have spoken to some incredible women, and I really hope that the podcast is becoming a place where we can learn from each other and take on board lessons that we can pass on to each other, and generally lift each other up and make each other feel better. And like, you aren't alone, because sometimes this journey can feel quite lonely and quite overwhelming. And I hope that in some tiny form, this podcast has helped you if you have had moments like that. So this is me signing off for the summer under the advice of my friend, who I did say to her, listen, if I lose all my listeners and no one comes back, it's entirely your fault. So I was obviously joking, but please don't do that. When the schools are back, the podcast will be back. I've got some brilliant guests lined up for you, and I can't wait for you to hear these inspiring, amazing conversations that will be back in September. Have a brilliant summer holidays. Let's hope we all survive, and I will see you at the beginning of September.